Well, hello, everybody. This is Dr. Diana Wiley. I'm your host of Love, Lust, and Laughter. And today we're going to take a slight departure from love and lust, although we'll certainly bring that into the conversation, won't we, Ross Rosenberg? How are you?
You bet we will. Thank you so much for having me on the show again.
Well, yes, and it's been too long because you were here in the spring of 2013, and you are a wonderful guest with an incredible book. The book is The Human Magnet Syndrome, Why We Love People Who Hurt Us, Emotional Manipulators, Codependence, and Dysfunctional Relationships. And your book has been selling very well. You and I had a chance to get caught up this morning.
Yes, you know, I'm really happy. It's doing really well on Amazon. It's been in a bunch of categories as number one, and has sold over 10,000 copies and is doing well. Could not be happier.
There's so many good messages in this book, which we will get into as this our interview goes on. If people go to Human Magnet Syndrome, M-A-G-N-E-T, magnet, not, yeah, magnet, syndrome.com, you'll see some wonderful YouTube videos of Ross Rosenberg on Good Day Chicago and ABC News. You'll get some really nice overviews of him talking on the, and we're going to get a more in-depth time with him, of course, in this interview today, this evening. And you've been having more fun, I think, doing some of these media.
Oh, yeah. In fact,
getting the word out.
In fact, it's my YouTube channel under Ross Rosenberg that has all the videos. I've been having a blast. I mean, not only do people like my book, and I get these wonderfully affirming emails and letters, the video that I have out there, and I got 55 of them, which are different excerpts from things that I talk about, things that I teach. I've had almost 600,000 views in the last 11 months.
And that's truly remarkable.
Yeah, I am so happy and blessed that that people really, and my work resonates for them. It's what I always thought of, you know. When I decided to be a therapist, you know, 30 years ago, you know, I had hoped to make some money to pay the bills and also, you know, make a difference. And boy, oh boy.
Yeah. And it is true that the media is the best way to get out good, solid information and to make a difference. Mm-hmm. I mean, we can make a difference with our clients, and you do that, I do that, but when we have media where we reach more people, it just expands the difference that we can make. You also have books and training videos.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that. I'm also, not only am I a psychotherapist, you know, with over 28 years' experience, I'm also a professional trainer. And mm-hmm. for years, I traveled around the United States giving trainings, you know, from which I would write my book. But I decided to spend more time with my wife, and I turned these trainings into DVDs, which are for both lay people and therapist and anyone, because, you know, both my book and my trainings and my YouTube videos really cross that barrier between the professional and the general audience. And those are also on humanmagnetsyndrome.com.
Yes, and I encourage any listeners to go to that website because you get so much more information about Ross Rosenberg. So what is the human magnet syndrome? And, you know, and of course I know some of these answers because I'm a psychotherapist too, but the listeners need to know, why do we repeat our bad relationship choices despite the bad outcomes?
You know, for the longest time, I was ashamed of my own marital history because as a psychotherapist, I didn't want to let people know that I've been divorced twice and married three times, even though my wife now, who I love dearly and I've been together with for almost 9 years, I felt like an imposter. So I set my goal to figure out what it was about me that found myself always attracted to the same type of woman that would seem so great in the beginning, but would hurt me. It was like a therapist once told me, the problem with me is that I'm always falling in love with the same woman who has a different face. And for me, that
And you're such, I have to interrupt here because until people go to your website, they can't see what an attractive man you are.
You're handsome.
So you probably did attract a bevy of women.
Oh, you're so sweet.
Isn't it true?
Well, thank you.
But some of these women were clearly the wrong women.
So what I learned was that I was codependent. I was always focused on taking care of other people. I was always, tuned into other people's needs more than my own. And I figured out that the common denominator of the type of person I was attracted to was they were always selfish and narcissistic.
Right.
And so I came to understand that these two are opposite people. A person that is a caregiver who loves unconditionally is attracted to someone who is a care neater, who takes.
Right.
So we
look
at magnets. We know that the north side is always attracted to the south side, and no matter how much where you place these magnets, they're always going to be attracted to each other. Well, the same thing is for codependents and narcissists. They are opposites, and their opposite personality, like a good dancing couple, they fit in. The leader of the dance is the narcissist, and the follower is the codependent. And that's where the human magnet syndrome idea came from.
I think it's brilliant, and I think it's accurate. What I understand is that intimacy is really an important source of balance because it's the deepest sense of comfort.
Mm-hmm.
So if you can gauge, and I do this with my clients, someone's capacity for intimacy, then you'll understand something about their ability to trust another person, reveal vulnerability, make a commitment of any kind, and finally, regulate the stress as well. You know, that kind of self-soothing that's important for people that are evolved and well-balanced, right?
Absolutely. In fact, the healthier you are, the more you're able to achieve the balance between your taking care of your own needs and someone you love.
Mm-hmm.
And that's neither codependent nor narcissistic. That's just a person that knows the importance of caretaking and loving someone else. And so part of taking care of ourselves is to understand that we are human and we hurt and we have pain and we have problems. But the stronger, the healthier, the more balanced you are, the more you can rely on your own inner resources to bring you past your most difficult times. Codependents and narcissists, unfortunately, did not develop the same way as healthy or balanced individuals. It is as if they're what I would call, analogously, they're half individuals. It's almost as if they need each other to feel whole. And, as we know, and I call this relationship math. In fact, I got an article in the Huffington Post entitled that. But these half people will gravitate towards each other, the human magnets, and finally they will fall in love, and they will feel so perfect and healthy, but they need each other to feel good about themselves. A healthy person is interdependent on the relationship. They feel good about themselves already, and their lover or their partner enhances themselves. And so what you were saying is exactly true, that our own resilience brings us to solving our problems, and that's what I try to do with my clients, is to help them heal those wounds that are largely responsible for their codependency.
Yes. I sometimes conceptualize this as people who are less evolved, less developed, they sort of think, well, if I'm one half and my partner is one half, we'll make a whole.
Right. And that is a half of a relationship.
That's right. And then, but with people that are more whole and evolved, one and one sometimes can be three.
Exactly.
Because there's that synergy
Absolutely.
At times. with a couple.
Exactly. In that article I was referring to, I say half and half equals one, which is a half a relationship.
Right.
And a full person, one and one, full person, a full person equals two, which is a whole relationship. And what you're saying is it goes beyond that. And yes, absolutely.
Yes. Yeah. So I want to get into a little more about why you wrote your book, and I know you're on your second book, and we'll talk about that in a bit. But Peter Pearson, and I know him from the years I was in Palo Alto. He's in Menlo Park, the Couples Institute in Menlo Park. And he wrote a blurb for your book, which really is a very good statement, and I want to quote that. Many couples have a give-and-take relationship. The takers will not read this book. The givers need to. For those who give too much, there is freedom in these pages. Clarity begins here. Learn why you are constantly frustrated no matter how much you give to your partner. Get this book and give yourself a gift. Good for Peter Pearson. I've always liked him. I haven't seen him for years, but he's a very bright guy and married to a woman, and they do couples workshops. They're excellent.
Yeah, and I was so grateful for it. I mean, I had endorsements by Melody Beattie, who is who just is just the absolute the greatest person and expert on codependency. And,
and also, that's right.
And also Harville Hendricks. So I
yes,
mean,
you got
I
a good.
I could not have been luckier.
Well, you wrote a book that resonated for these people and spoke the truth. So tell us a little bit more about why you wrote this book.
Sure.
You yourself, you admit you're a recovering codependent. So would you talk about that?
Absolutely. You know, what I learned is that after each, after the second divorce, I became quite depressed, and I became embarrassed and ashamed, and it really hit my self-esteem, and I felt like I was living, you know, two different worlds, you know, living a lie that I am this therapist trying to help people, but yet I can't get it together by myself. And so that is what I call my bottom, and that is when I started working my tail off in psychotherapy, and I figured out that codependency is rooted in a person's childhood experience with their parents.
Yeah.
If you had a narcissistic parent and a codependent parent, because that's how the human magnet syndrome works, you were harmed and in some ways traumatized as a child because you were not loved unconditionally. It was a conditional parenting. The child who survived the narcissistic parent learned that their self-worth was to be everything that their parent wanted them to be. So they ultimately had to sacrifice their own needs to be this trophy or this object of great pride. Well, once I learned that I had been walking around with all this pain my whole life of feeling not worthy of people's love, and that somehow I was recreating that relationship by the women I was choosing. So it was this automatic, unconscious, or reflexive choice in the type of woman represented the type of person who I felt comfortable with. I mean, it doesn't make sense, because why would a codependent be comfortable with a narcissist? But if all you know is how to take care of someone, it's like the dancing couple. If you are trained as the follower, who are you going to dance with? You're going to dance with the leader. And once I figured that out, I knew I was onto something. I was if I was going to stop this pattern, I had to heal those wounds that that I was carrying around. That was affecting what a friend once called my broken picker, and he would flex his index.
Yeah, I want to hear about that. But before we hear about your broken picker,
formerly broken picker.
Yeah, right. Former, yes. So as you described this, I thought about Sigmund Freud's theory about repetition compulsion. And repetition compulsion is pretty interesting. And I, over the 32 years I've been doing this work, I have actually seen it in action with my couples. So what it means is, I know you know, but I want to explain it to the listeners, that usually it's unconscious, but sometimes it can be more conscious, especially if you're in therapy. Mm-hmm. So we will often, based on what we've learned in our family of origin, and if we have dysfunctional parents, we learn certain skills, how to cope. Mm-hmm. And then when we are choosing a mate, we'll often pick somebody where there's a resonation. And we want to marry our struggle and then make it have a happier ending.
Right.
And so we use our skills, and sometimes it has a happier ending, and sometimes it doesn't. But the more it can be in your consciousness, the better it is. Do you think that in your first two marriages, where you were still sifting through some of your own codependent, did you probably learn some things as you went through that?
Yeah, and what you described is what I learned early on in my career. It's interesting how we therapists, we absorb so much information.
Mm-hmm,
whether it's
yes.
Freud, Erickson, Harvel Hendricks, Alice Miller, Murray Bowen, all the people that influenced me. And then when it came time for me to come up with my own explanation, I found that I was standing on the great shoulders of the experts that preceded me.
Mm-hmm.
And so my explanation is what we call a psychodynamic explanation, which means to understand your present behavior, you have to understand, the conditions that formed your personality, which are largely during your formative years or your earliest years in life. And Freud and his predecessors talked about that we are so affected by how our parents loved us or did not love us.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And it creates what I call a relationship template.
Okay.
That if you learn that you're only lovable by what you do, or what I think Terry Kellogg once said is a human doing versus a human being who just feels lovable for being.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But if you're this human doing, and that is going to be kind of crystallized, and by the time you're an adult, that is your comfort level. And so you are going to instinctively, unconsciously play that out because that's all you know, and you do it really well. Now, if you do the opposite and you were a child who was raised by narcissistic parents and could never please them, and you were ignored or abused, you grew up thinking that to survive, it was all about you. So the child, perhaps from the same parent, could grow up in along a different pathway as a narcissist, and they grew up learning that to be loved, you had to take it from others.
So you had to what from others?
To be loved, you had to take it from others.
You had to
make it yours, because this child got no attention.
Mm-hmm.
And so the relationship template for this child was would be set in stone, and he would eventually, or she would be eventually, a narcissistic adult. So when you fast forward, and these kids grow up into teens and adults who start dating and eventually get married, when they meet someone, it's almost that instinct that Freud and the psychoanalytic and psychodynamic people talked about. It comes from a place where you're not conscious of, that just kind of moves you in that direction, and that's where the human magnet syndrome comes up. You are unconsciously attracted to, magnetically like, to the person that feels right, who's opposite from you. The caretaker finds the care needer, and vice versa.
Right. And so in therapy, when I'm thinking that this is going on, I will ask, what are you doing habitually that leaves your partner dissatisfied?
Mm-hmm.
And if they're not sure how to identify a pattern, then I coach them to ask, how do I interfere with our intimacy? And if a partner's response leaves them feeling vulnerable or defensive, it's likely right on target, because right. most are protective of childhood patterns. They're protective of childhood patterns.
Right, because it is the childhood pattern is more than a pattern. It's really, I mean, because when we think of patterns, we think of habits.
Mm-hmm.
It's more of the childhood experience sets in stone, crystallizes what, you know, like I said, I call a relationship template. And mm-hmm. you learn, it's like when you learn how to ride a bike, it's hard to unlearn it. Because, I mean, if you would unlearn it, you would fall on the ground.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, I mean, think about that. If you learn that this is how people love you, is by sacrificing, it's hard as heck to unlearn that. And you bring that all the way through all your relationships, from your high school, your college, to this and that. And so these codependents, you know, they don't just fall in love with narcissistic lovers. They also have, they tend to like be the volunteer. They tend to be the person that everyone wants help from, because mm-hmm. they just feel that's who they are and that's how they feel loved. So codependency is very pervasive.
Oh, yes, it is indeed. Now, before the break, and we have a few minutes before mm-hmm. the break, I'd really like you to expand on the broken picker, P-I-C-K-E-R, story.
Yeah.
What is that, Ross?
Well, you know, you think of, if you look at your index finger and people say, well, I want that person or I like that person, and they're picking. You know, I went to, this friend, and he said, the problem with you, Ross, is you have a broken picker, is you pick the wrong person. And what he was telling me is that I could not rely on what I thought were my conscious preferences, because I could talk all day about, I like a woman who is this and that, mm-hmm. I like her to be this and that, and I could being a writer, I could write a couple pages on that.
Sure.
But once we start talking to someone and they fit our relationship template, it's like you fall for that person. The codependent almost falls helplessly in love with the narcissist because there's something about them that feels so right. They don't see that they're self-centered and selfish.
Mm-hmm.
No, the codependent, when they meet the narcissist, they feel like this person has edge and charm and bold
mm-hmm.
and confidence. They see everything that it just hits them like a train.
Mm-hmm.
And mm-hmm. the same with the narcissist. They don't see someone who has no self-esteem, who always will defer to their needs. They see the perfect person who will listen to them, who will be compassionate, who will hold their hand when they talk about their three wives and and their six children who want child support. And they're the only people in the world that understand their pain. It's as if the codependent and the narcissist are built for each other.
Well, and they often do get together. And I heard you say on one of your television appearances when I watched the YouTube,
mm-hmm.
aren't these great? People can watch. That sometimes the soulmate becomes the cellmate.
Yeah, that comes from a saying that my dad once said as a joke.
Oh.
It's funny that my narcissistic dad made it into my book with a quote.
So your father was narcissistic.
Oh,
okay.
Well, look, you know what? It codependency and narcissism travel from generation
sure.
to generation.
Sure, absolutely. And then your mother was more codependent.
Oh, absolutely. In fact,
yeah.
she was a sponsor in Codependency Anonymous and Overeating Anonymous.
Really?
Okay. God rest her soul.
You know the dynamics, the patterns very well.
And my grandfather was the most codependent man you'd ever meet, and grandma was narcissistic. And I mean,
it
always goes from generation to generation, because
mm-hmm.
narcissists make these children. And if you don't get psychological help, I promise you, without you knowing, you're going to pass it on to the next generation, despite your best efforts and your promises to yourself. Because no one just decides to make kids who are going to be narcissists or
mm-hmm.
codependents. They raise kids without a balance of healthy love.
Yeah, and it's true that narcissists have trouble working on relationships once they get beyond the first blissful stage of falling in love, because when other people begin to talk about working out problems, often the narcissist will back off.
Well, narcissists,
you know, they don't want to think about improving things. They only want to think or hear about how wonderful they are.
Exactly. But more than that, narcissists, people at least with the personality disorder, narcissistic personality disorder, they're incapable of understanding what's wrong with themselves. And if you ever ask a narcissist what's wrong with yourself or you correct them, everyone knows they get really mad at you. And then they start blaming you for the very thing that you said was her fault.
Mm-hmm.
They deny it. It's as if these people are so fragile, they're incapable of understanding their part in a problem, especially if they cause it. So these folks not only don't see that they have a problem, they blame the other person. So think about it. Who is the perfect personality type for the narcissist? Who's going to take someone else's blame and not draw boundaries? The codependent.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but when...
The perfect partner for the narcissist.
It's the dance couple that I write about.
The dance couple.
Mm-hmm. And so when this perfectly balanced dysfunctional relationship, it can only last if the codependent stays codependent. And what happens in a lot of my therapy, and which I write about in my second book, is that when the codependent gets healthier, there's no more balance. It becomes unstable because the narcissist doesn't know what to do with someone who has self-esteem and sets boundaries. So there's two choices for the codependent, is to get bullied and pushed back to their old codependent way, or the narcissist get healthier. And since
mm-hmm.
we know that most narcissists won't, what I find is that these relationships don't last. That's what happened with me.
Yes, that's what happened with you. So in the couple of minutes before we have...
Mm-hmm.
Do you mind just expanding on that a little bit and self-disclosing?
When my clients who are codependent start to set boundaries and start to insist that they don't want to do
mm-hmm.
everything, and they really, the narcissist is threatened by it, and they only have two options, is to beat the codependent down to get back to the status quo. But when they can't beat the codependent down, it makes everyone nervous and anxious.
Uh-huh.
And if the codependent doesn't back down and the narcissist won't change, they eventually get to the point where they're going to walk away from the relationship because there's nothing there for them anymore. And that's what, unfortunately what happens, or fortunately, when the codependent gets healthier.
Because then sometimes these folks, and I've seen it actually, do move on to healthier relationships.
Oh, of course. That's what I live for. I mean, that's why I write my books.
Right. That's what, yeah, we live for that, right?
Absolutely. That's why I write my books. That's why I do my training. That's why I do therapy, is that I love, you know, passing that on, is unleashing the potential for healthy, balanced love. It's beautiful to see a codependent go from this empty, dark place of loneliness
mm-hmm.
to eventually, whether it's a year or 2 years, however long it takes in therapy, to see them finally experiencing, you know, unconditional love, love of self, love of others. It's
mm-hmm.
a beautiful transformation to witness.
Well, it really is. And I get to see this too. And isn't it a huge part of our job satisfaction?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I could not.
You know, to make a
job.
Difference like that, and since I have the sexuality piece of it with sex therapy, when people get really happy
mm-hmm.
sexually, since I believe our sexuality is at our core, and maybe when we get back from our break, we'll talk just a little bit about this, since the show is called Love, Lust,
mm-hmm.
and Laughter. Yeah, that when people can start to relate better sexually, there is that kind of merging and that happiness and that excitement. And but people to do this well need to be pretty healthy. So that's why in many cases I have to do psychotherapy before I can do sex therapy.
you know, and I'm not a sex therapist, but I do specialize in sex addiction therapy, which is a little
I
different.
Know. So let's, we'll revisit, well, yeah. not revisit. Well, I think we did talk a little bit about it in the spring of last year, but so we'll come to that and other things. So please stay with us and we'll be
sure.
right back. Yeah, sex is good. And so Ross Rosenberg and I are going to continue to talk about his book, The Human Magnet Syndrome, and you can find that online at humanmagnetsyndrome.com. So just before the break, we were just starting to get into sexual narcissism, and it seems to me that there is a connection between addiction and sexual narcissism, but before we talk about that, I think, you know, having a good physical image of yourself is absolutely necessary for good sex, but unhealthy narcissists, for somebody like this, it requires an absolutely perfect image of herself or himself. And if their image isn't perfect, they just cannot experience passion. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. So I get a lot of women clients who are a bit narcissistic, and they do have body image issues for sure. They have to be, in their own minds, they have to be
right.
perfect.
Right.
Or they can't really let go, surrender, which of course is key for really good sex and lots of orgasms. Just to let go, surrender, be mm-hmm. in the moment, that sort of thing. And this is where the addiction part may come in, because I think another sign of sexual narcissism in both women and men is a compulsive need for new conquests.
Mm-hmm.
And so they may have trouble working on relationships once they get beyond the first blissful stage of falling in love. So have you experience that in your clinical work?
Yeah, you know, what I find is that with sex addiction,
mm-hmm.
It's a need to. It comes from an insatiable need to feel better about something that's deeply buried inside of them that makes them feel horrible,
mm-hmm.
and that could be a sense of like the, you know, being detached or lonely or mm-hmm. forgotten, and they find that sex, the pleasure of sex, the activity of sex, is that medicine that helps them forget where they're at in their miserable world. And so the person who self-medicates enough time gets eventually addicted to the drug. And the drug, the sex, becomes the drug. As we know, sex as manifested in the brain is very similar to alcohol or cocaine or other drugs. So what I've come to understand, the connection between that and codependency, is people who are lonely and disconnected and who come from a family in which, you know, as I mentioned earlier, that they're human doings, they're going to eventually be codependent. They tend to choose partners who are dominant and who are narcissistic. And they when they meet through the human magnet syndrome, they may connect sexually very deeply and very intensely. It is the sex that bridges that gap between the relationship. They don't have healthy relationship background. So the person who instinctively, reflexively picks a narcissist who's codependent, who grew up realizing that sex was an escape or sexual stimulation was an escape, what they will do is they will use sex to escape the pain of being in that relationship with a narcissist.
Mm-hmm.
And that, it's like using alcohol, because eventually if they use alcohol to self-medicate, they're eventually going to become an alcoholic. So this codependent that uses sex to self-medicate their loneliness of being in a relationship with a narcissist eventually becomes addicted to sex. And sex, the pleasure of it, no longer becomes this healthy union between two people. It becomes a drug that helps them run away from the pain.
Mm-hmm.
So what I noticed is the codependent sex addict behaves very narcissistically. Everything it's about having sex. They are what you call narcissistically sexual. But once they are in recovery and getting treatment from codependency and sex addiction, something very interesting happens. They no longer need to self-medicate. And what we find out is they're codependent. And as they get healthier, the narcissist who, gets angry and upset at the changes in this healthy person.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a very interesting phenomenon how sex addiction and codependency are connected, especially when the sex addict is a codependent.
That is fascinating. And I'm thinking of a colleague who runs men's groups. In fact, quite a while ago, he was on this program, Mark Gilmartin,
mm-hmm.
and he runs men's groups for men who are sexually out of control. And I don't think we've ever had that discussion. I mean, probably knows it, but we didn't have this discussion. I think that's a fascinating connection.
I don't think people know. This is one of my original ideas. I kind of
mm-hmm.
discovered this. I think that most people automatically assume that sex addicts are narcissists because, like any addict, all they want is their drug, and it'll lead them to do things that are self-destructive.
Mm-hmm.
But once, you look at an alcoholic. I mean, that's a disease. We know that. When a person who is not drinking anymore and is in recovery, then you find out after like 4 weeks of sobriety, what is their real personality that preceded their addiction? What led them to needing alcohol? And when a sex addict starts to clear out, clean out, detox, and we find out that they're codependent, we find that they needed sex as a drug to escape. And then remember I went back to the dance concept, how the codependent,
yeah.
the narcissist.
Mm-hmm.
And now what we find out, and it's very complicated, is as the recovering codependent sex addict gets healthier, what we find out is the partner gets upset. And she doesn't know why, because as a narcissist, they have a hard time accepting responsibility.
Sure.
And it becomes, but what makes it complicated is what the sex addict did to them is inexcusable. And so not only are they traumatized
mm-hmm.
by what their partner did to them, and you add into their own narcissism, it makes a very dysfunctional situation.
And without professional help, I'm going to guess, pretty hard to extract themselves from.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Because the misery sort of perpetuates itself, and it, yeah?
Absolutely, and It's a very hard marital therapy to deal with someone who not is only on the narcissistic side, but has been hurt really badly, legitimately. Even though the codependent is as he or she is, we never excuse her or him for what they did sexually. And so we have a person that doesn't take feedback well because they're narcissistic, and they were hurt by the codependent's lies. It's sometimes almost impossible to break through with this couple. But when you do, great things do happen.
Well, you describe it very well. I think you're just a brilliant therapist to be able to work so deeply and so well with couples like this. And then they must read your book. Again, listeners, The Human Magnet, MAGNET Syndrome. Just an excellent book.
Thank you.
So you also talk, and I don't know what this is about, the Surgeon General's warning. What is that?
It's what I think it's a responsibility for therapists to warn their clients the dangers of getting healthy. Just like the Surgeon General warns us the dangers of drinking or the
mm-hmm.
dangers of smoking so we can make an informed decision, I feel that it is ethical and moral to tell my codependents that based upon what I know about the human magnet syndrome is that if they get healthier, in all their relationships, people are going to get really mad at them.
Well, everything changes.
And
the patterns.
Absolutely. They are going to experience so much grief and anxiety and sadness and loneliness mm-hmm. that I warn them ahead of time that to get healthy, there's going to be losses and it's going to be harmful and you're going to wish you never saw me. But if you get past the hump, and I explain this in depth and, you know, and when I talk about the four stages of codependency recovery, that's covered in my latest seminar DVD. But
yeah.
But I tell them once you get over the hump, everything will change. So I try to be responsible and let people know, hey, this is not just a walk in the park. It's going to be tough as nails. It's going to be the hardest thing you've ever done is to recover from codependency because you're going to learn to say no and people are going to get mad. Your mother, your brother, your boss, your husband, your children, all these people that profess to love you all are going to get mad. But there's a point in this process when the wheat separates from the chaff and the people that actually are narcissistic, that don't really love you in a healthy way, they're going to go away. And you're going to be left with the people who still love you, and they might not be happy with you. And from there, you build, and that's where the relationships start to take root.
You are very articulate about this. One of my clients confessed, I had a bad habit of dating men with whom I felt needy, probably because they never gave me much.
Mm-hmm.
And it took me a number of years to understand that I wasn't abnormally needy. And so I began to realize that there's a big difference between saying, I'd love a hug, and I will fall apart without a hug.
Right.
So, I think when you can let yourself lean on someone to do what you can't do for yourself, that's a healthy dependency.
Right.
Like with my fiance.
Mm-hmm.
He's
yep.
my tech support. He's much more than that, but I'm not very good at this, and he's very good at it. But it seems like that's a healthy dependency.
But that's not I call it interdependency. That is
mm-hmm.
that is leaning on someone for help while you're giving them as much as they're giving you, but just
yeah.
in a balanced way.
Right.
And it sounds like you have a lovely relationship.
Oh, I couldn't be better, and I'm so excited because we're going to get together tonight. it's very, very happy, and I give to him, and he gives to me, and I bet you and your wife do this. I mean, it's when you're more mature and you've lived through some things, you do have a happier relationship. Can you talk a little bit about your marriage?
You know, my wife and I, you know, we met at the right time because, you
mm-hmm.
know, we were two people that were on the upswing and healing.
Yeah.
And because of that, you know, our magnetic propensities changed. I no longer was attracted to someone dysfunctional. I became attracted
mm-hmm.
to someone healthy. And I talk about that in the Human Magnet Syndrome book, that it's just not about dysfunctional people being attracted to each other. Healthy people are also attracted to each other, but in a certain way.
Yeah.
And so my wife, we're a work in progress, and we've never been happier. We've never
mm-hmm.
experienced a relationship as solid and as dependable and as supportive. And it's a blessing to have someone who will be there for you even during your bad times and grow with you. And so, yes, I've never been happier in my life.
Well, isn't that wonderful? Yes. And I think sometimes as psychotherapists, we read a lot and we experience a lot and we see our clients and
mm-hmm.
and so we have opportunities for self-healing
mm-hmm.
because we have a heightened awareness of what can be good
mm-hmm.
and not so good, wouldn't you say?
Absolutely. And but That is a psychotherapist that practices what they preach, where they, and as I write in my book, it's called The Golden Rule of the Helping Profession, is don't expect others to do what you haven't done yourself.
Yeah, well, I really lucked out because I did come out of a very happy family with secure attachment. Mm-hmm. So, I haven't gone through a lot of difficulties. Well, except that my father was killed by a truck when I was 14, and my last husband, died so suddenly, unexpectedly, when he was only 57. And so for me to find Brian almost 4 years ago felt absolutely wonderful, but I had done lots of work, and I was ready to meet Brian, and he to meet me. We recognized each other, and I suspect you have felt that way about your wife too.
Well, and that's an example of the healthy manifestation of the human magnet syndrome. Healthy people will almost magnetically gravitate towards their healthy opposite. So the person who is likes to give so much that they lose themselves, they're codependent. But the person who likes to give and take care of others, who also can set boundaries and can be in relationships where other people give, so that's a person that's on the healthy giving side. The person who likes to do things for themselves in extreme is a narcissist. But in a milder version, that's a person like, for example, me, who likes to write, who likes to talk on radio shows, who likes to do book signings. But as much as I like to do things for myself, I'm able to love my wife and take care of her. So opposites still attract. People who come together in healthy relationships still are balanced by what I call their different self-orientation. Mm-hmm. The person who is kind of the volunteer, the giver, is attracted to the person that's very confident, that likes things for themselves, but yet both people are so able to take care of themselves. And
so does this feed into your observe, don't absorb technique? It may not. I don't know, because we talked about this, but I don't know the details. We talked about this off the air.
Yeah, actually, it does not, but the observe, don't absorb technique is something I developed for, my latest seminar and the book that I'm writing. It's a way to keep the narcissist from controlling you. Narcissists control you when you get mad. They control you when you have an emotional reaction, because there's a saying by George, I think it was Bernard Shaw, when you wrestle with pigs, you're going to get dirty. And absolutely. And so so the narcissist has home field advantage when you start arguing, because they are manipulators.
Yeah.
They know how to get people to react in order to get them to do what they need to do. So I teach my recovering codependent clients is to learn to consciously disconnect from the narcissist's manipulation and to stay as an observer of their manipulation tactics. And so instead of absorbing or letting that toxin in, because if it's poison and you let a little bit of toxin in, you get sick, right?
Yes.
Well, if you let the narcissist in, the toxic stuff, you're going to feel angry and mad and resentful, and then you've lost your control. So, but to absorb is to let it in, to observe is to watch and not let it upset you. So I teach my clients, this technique to help them maintain power over the narcissist as they're setting boundaries and trying to be healthy.
I think that's a brilliant technique, Ross. And I'm sure it helps people if they can absorb it.
Absorb in a good way.
In a good way. So as we wind this show down, I also want to ask you about what the role of trauma is in codependency.
As I talked earlier,
you did touch on it a little bit.
Yeah, the codependent is always has a story to tell. The stories are always a little bit different, but most often there was great loss of love, acceptance, and care. They could not. They had a parent that either was abusive, neglectful, absent, and they learned through this experience that they're only valuable if they took care of other people's needs. I have come to understand that in totality, that was childhood trauma.
Yeah.
When I talk to my codependent clients and they start recollecting of their childhood and they share the pain, I'm listening to adults who were really traumatized as kids.
Mm-hmm.
And once we therapists start to help those clients heal that trauma, I think that's where we can get our codependent clients past that repetition compulsion that we talked about earlier.
Yeah. Well, that is very true. Ross, we have so much to talk about.
Well, thank you.
I would like for there not to be another year and 4 months between our times, because this program does reach out to a lot of people, including internationally, because it's on the internet. And so I'm going to be in touch with you about when we can schedule a part two for 2014.
Cool.
Because there's just so much here, and people need to hear your words of wisdom and perhaps my interactions with you.
Oh, sure.
And we still have a few minutes, but I just sort of, as I reflect on some of this, I'm thinking that perhaps the saddest aspect of narcissism and the codependent syndromes is that it acts as a barrier to true pleasure in nearly every area of life,
especially sexually, because the
that's what I'm talking about. Yes.
Yes, I mean, I think of, you know, that the codependent sexually is completely present about taking care of their partner and never really learns of the wonder and the joy of letting go and letting someone take care of them. Codependents, you know, they don't know how to enjoy themselves because they can't relax enough because they're always trying to make sure their partner is taken care of.
And there may even, in some instances, be a fear.
Oh, sure, yeah.
If I just got to try a little harder. And I think a lot of narcissists, you know, focus on external rewards. And if there's no payoff other than enjoyment, then the narcissist may not be interested sexual. The narcissist at play.
Yes, I can't tell you how many codependent clients of mine, women, are either aorgasmic, have not had an orgasm,
right,
or are in a partnership where they'll tell me about having sex, and I'll ask them, did he, not to sound too crass, but did he take care of your needs?
Right.
And they'll say, well, not really, but that's okay. And they'll look at me kind of confused, like, why are you asking that question? They don't even know that it's normal for a woman to have as much pleasure and especially an orgasm.
Mm-hmm.
And because they, of course, were raised as human doers, and yes, that plays out in sex too.
Well, it certainly does, and. Well, we're going to talk some more soon, and I'll be in touch with you off the air.
Cool.
So I want to remind listeners, and I'll write this up as I do when the show ends, to go to your website, Ross Rosenberg, and the website is humanmagnetsyndrome.com, and you'll be able to see Ross Rosenberg in action on Good Day Chicago and ABC News, and his training videos. And you're very good at this. I looked at those. I mean, you're a good teacher, a good trainer.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome.
I try hard.
Well, and you bring a lot of life experience to it. And, yeah. Hey, Ross, I'm so glad you were my guest today.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you so much for having me on it. It was even more enjoyable the second time.
Oh, well, sometimes second times around are.
Have to do three.
Yeah, so we'll do that. And so I thank you again, and I encourage you listeners to visit his website. You'll get a lot more information from that. And I'll be back next week, and then I probably will do a replay the following week because I'm in Los Angeles with my fiancé, and it's kind of business and pleasure. yeah, I know. It's always fun to combine business and pleasure. Maybe not in the same moments, but anyway. All right, Ross, thank you so much. You're just a delight and such an intelligent, sensitive man. I'm so glad that we got to know each other even on the air, right?
Oh, thank you. Yeah, you're an absolute charming woman and such a good radio host, and I look forward to talking to you some more.
Yeah, I'll be in touch with you.
Well, you take.
Thank you again.
Thank you all.
Yes. Goodbye, everybody. Tune in next week. Love, Lust, and Laughter. This is Dr. Diana Wiley signing off.